Hey, gang, did you know that with Stitcher's free mobile app, you can listen to your favorite radio programs and podcasts anytime and anywhere you want? Stitcher's wide breadth of programming lets you choose from the latest in news, sports, talk, business, and entertainment from the media industry's premier content providers. It's the easiest way to stay connected to your world while on the go and receive news that's important to you in a format that fits into your busy day. How Did I Get Here is on Stitcher. You can listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, or pad. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your listenership. Thank you for being a listener of this show. Yeah. I got a great show for you guys today. Ali Tadros, New York singer-songwriter, is here talking to me. This has been a long time coming. We first were supposed to get together in New York and do a podcast in June of 2014. But anyway, it took until September of 2015 to sit down with Ali Tadros and talk. I want to thank my friend Susanna Schaufel for introducing us and hooking us up. She's great, man. She was in town doing a show a few weeks ago, and I got to go see her play. It was at the Austonian in a very, it was an interesting setting. It was a listening situation, but it was in like the rec room of a really nice condo building, the Austonian, the tallest building in all of Austin. So she was there. She was doing a show with this guy, Ben Ballmer, who I didn't know, and then ended up meeting, talking to, and he came on the show. So you'll hear that in the next while or whatever. But listen, let me talk to you about Ali Tadros. She's a great artist. She's got a Pledge Music campaign that she's going to start in November, and she wants you to go to her alitadros.com, that's Ali with a Y, and sign up on her email list. You can find out when she's coming out, and you can also get a link to the Pledge Music campaign when it comes out. So Ali, fantastic person. It was very nice getting to talk to her. We had a great conversation. We had a lot of laughs. She's a very, very cool, very clear, and very open person. So I really enjoyed getting to know Ali and looking forward to getting to see her again and seeing what else she does musically, because she is a really great singer-songwriter. All right, stay tuned for that. Ali and I will be talking in just a second. Let me tell you what's going on with me. Things are going good. Been doing a lot of podcasts. Playing a lot with Skyrocket. We went to Houston this weekend. I had this thing where I forgot my boots, and I forgot my recorder because I was going to do this intro in my hotel in between soundcheck and the gig because I had a couple hours to kill. And I like doing that. It gives me kind of something to do, purpose. Because I don't know if any of you listening can relate to this. If you travel, you get to a place and it's kind of hurry up and wait. And it's a matter of what you do with that time when you wait. You could actually write songs, or you could sit there and just kind of stare at the walls, or you can watch a TV, or you can do something. But you can actually do something, get some stuff done. So I leave some stuff that I'd like to do, you know, to keep, and it also keeps your blood moving. Sometimes I find if you just sit down and stop moving, you kind of get tired, and it's hard to get going again. So anyway, whatever. I've been trying to make the most of my time lately, okay? Just trying to get some stuff done, be a little more productive. Okay, so hey, listen, if you're in Houston this Friday, October 9th, Skyrocket will be at the Continental Club. We'll be doing a show there this Friday night. We go on at about 10. Great show. Get your tickets early because it does sell out there, and that's a nice thing to say. And then Saturday night, we will be in Pflugerville. It's always funny to say that. Well, we'll be in Pflugerville at Hanover's. Always have a good time there. Come on out. If you're up there and you're avoiding all of the downtown craziness from ACL and you want to just chill out and be in a place, be at that place if you want. It's a good place. Man, the weather's been so nice. I drove back from Houston yesterday. We played there Saturday night. Drove back. Such nice weather. Windows down, thing open, you know. Nice cool breeze coming in. Had a jacket. Listening to all these mixes that I made on Spotify, which I think I should make public. Do you guys make, if you make a playlist on Spotify, post it on the How Did I Get Here Facebook page, okay? Also, hey, I want to encourage you guys, if you're listening to this, you don't know about our Facebook page, get out to our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? Like it, you'll see photos of people, get updates from bands, get updates from me, see what's going on, see some photos, you know, whatever. You'll like it. I don't know what the problem is. You just got to go like it. All right. Hey, let's sit down and talk to Ali Tadro. She's a fantastic artist, man. You can find her on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Her music is everywhere. Check her out at alitadros.com. And don't forget to sign up on her email list, and you'll find out when she gets her Pledge Music campaign going. And you can help her out. Yeah, you can help out artists these days. You can become part of the crowdfunding thing that's Pledge Music and Kickstarter and all those things. So go to alitadros.com, sign up on her email list, find out when she's coming to a town near you, get plugged in, find out when she's doing her pledge campaign, and enjoy my conversation right now with the lovely and talented and hilarious Ali Tadros. Let's get down.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Guys, you know what I enjoyed? His Debbie Gibson one. Wasn't his the one
I
with
just
Debbie
heard
Gibson?
The Debbie Gibson one. Yeah, yeah. His one with Jason Isbell. He's just like, his elevator pitches are the best, because he's just like sitting around. It's like he's drinking a beer and he's like, I use this Pope, like, stamps are a pain in the ass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So use this postage service.
Yeah, stamps.com.
right. I feel like I'm in his living room having a beer talking about stamps.com.
He is in his living room, right?
Probably. No, I don't know. Maybe.
You're not having a beer with him.
I would like to believe. That's why I listen to the podcast, because I know him.
That happened to me with the Paul Stanley audiobook read by him. I listened to it on drives, and I do this so much that while I was driving listening to it, I went, oh, yeah, I know. I swear to God.
That's when you know you've been in the car too long. You're having a conversation with the podcast.
Yeah, I'm talking to Paul Stanley in his audiobook. God, that's crazy.
One more story and then I'm done.
Okay, one more story and then you're done, because we're running out of time here. No, I'm joking.
Shit. That was the whole conversation. You're
done.
That was
the whole podcast.
So, like, maybe a month or two after I started listening to Brian Koppelman's podcast, I went to go see Jason Isbell live, and Brian was there, and he was standing, like, 2 yards away from me, and I had a whole conversation in my head, and, like, texted my friends for, like, 20 minutes, like, do I go say hello? I know everything about him. This is really creepy. And I didn't talk to him. I had one of those.
Yeah. Sometimes that's weird.
Right.
Because you feel like you know the person. Even last night, my girlfriend Zuri was like, we ran into a guy that has been on the show at the Paramount. And she was like, it's weird. When we walked away, she's like, I just met him for the first time, but I feel like I know him.
Right.
That happens.
Right.
Yeah. Do you do a lot of podcasts?
I've done a fair amount. I haven't done one in a while.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do people have a lot of them in New York? A lot of, can you come on my podcast kind of people?
I feel like that's an LA thing. It's like
it
a
is
West
an
Coast.
LA thing,
it's a
isn't
West Coast
it? Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
What do you like better? Obviously, you live in New York, but do you like LA?
I love LA. Every time I go out to LA, I get off the plane and I'm like, what the hell am I doing with my life? Why do I live in New York? What is wrong
with
us?
You live in Brooklyn?
I live in Brooklyn in Crown Heights.
Yeah, how long do you live there?
Oh, God. I've been in Crown Heights for 2 years, Brooklyn for like 3.5 now. Okay. But I love my neighborhood. It's like West Indian mostly. It's like half Orthodox Jew, half West Indian. So like you jog in one direction and you offend a bunch of people. And you jog in another direction, you get a bunch of marriage proposals. In my little spandex shorts.
That's cute. How did you've had a long, you started out in Laredo?
Mm-hmm. That's where I was born. Born and raised in Laredo, Texas. Yeah.
Is there any Mexican...
Guys, no.
Because your dad's from where?
My dad's Egyptian.
Egyptian.
Yeah. No, I've got
that. So is that why you, is that the exotic?
Why I'm brown.
Look, I'm Cuban and I just turned out like this. So I have like, I'm brown on the inside. It's terrible.
It's like the Beyonce version of I woke up like this. I turned out like this.
Yeah, I turned out like this. So the reason why you're brown is because your dad's Egyptian. What's your mom?
Mom's American. Mom grew up in Mexico, but she's like Scandinavian, Irish, blonde.
How do Egyptians end up in Laredo?
Oh, God. I don't. You know what? I think like Hispanic culture is not that unlike Egyptian culture in the sense that it's like really warm and everyone tries to overfeed you all the time.
So. But was there some kind of job or something that took your dad to Laredo? You like, yes. Looked on a map and was
right.
Like,
this town is where. He left Egypt right before the Six-Day War in the 70s. He's a Coptic Christian, the Orthodox Christian Church in Egypt, and they're in the minority there, and you know, they have a pretty hard time. They've had a hard time in the last couple of years. So he just knew it would be hard for him to make money. He's a physician. He was a doctor, and he was working on a naval base, and they found out that the war was right around the corner, so he got the heads up from, I don't know, on the base, and he left. And weirdly, there was like a neuropathologist working in Victoria, Texas, who was also Egyptian. And, you know, there were like three Egyptians in Texas, you know, this was like in the 70s. And so he ended up down there. And eventually he got called in to do an interview in Laredo. And the funny story is he goes to Laredo to do the interview. He's like, not going to take the job. My mom had just graduated from college and she was working in the hospital as a candy striper.
No way.
For the summer. Yep. Right before going to grad school. And she served him coffee. My mom is this very stoic.
That's some General Hospital shit.
It really is.
Totally.
His long blonde hair. She serves him coffee and he decides to take the job. So he takes the job, moves to Laredo. He starts asking her out. My dad is 21 years older than my mom. She's totally creeped out by him. So she says no all the time. He figures out eventually that she's, you know, very, very polite Gentile woman. And one day she shows up to her desk and there's a bag of blood on her desk. And she's like, well, this doesn't belong here. So she takes the bag of blood and she goes to the pathology lab and she gives it to one of the nurses. And my dad asks her out in front of everybody. Says, what time should I pick you up tomorrow night? And she was too polite to say no in front of everybody. So she says, yes. They went out, and that night he told her, he was like, God, the Egyptian men, they're insane. You know, just like 6 months from now, we'll be engaged. 9 months from now, we're going to be married. And she was like, you're crazy. Sure enough, they were married, and they were married for almost 40 years.
Wow. And then he passed away?
Recently? 2 years ago.
2 years ago? Yeah, that's pretty recent.
Yeah.
Did that coincide with your sobriety?
It did.
Was that like the...
He was my... Yeah. I got sober while he was really sick, and I knew it was coming, and, you know, that just, it was sort of like a shit storm that led up to me quitting drinking.
Yeah. I read the blog thing about the 2 years being sober,
or being
2 years sober. Mm-hmm. That was very moving. Like that, I think that there's a lot of people that don't think they're alcoholics or deny that they're alcoholics. A, because of look at what we do, you know, like, I mean, your thing wasn't at a bar, but if it would have been, I would have been in two situations where you're drinking. I didn't go to the after thing last night because I had this and I knew I'd drink a lot.
Right. Well, and it's so easy. I mean, like,
so easy.
Even now that I don't drink, you know, if I'm at a show or I'm at someone else's show, I'm like experiencing all these awkward emotions or like awkward silences. If there's like a bowl of M&Ms around, I'm going for that. Like, we're dealing with a lot all the time, and we're like highly sensitive people. It's part of the reason we do this.
So you got sober to partially take that on as a, or to sort of be.
To be present for it? Yeah, because it was really hard for me, I think, to be with all of those feelings and not just sort of drink them down and deal with them in really self-destructive ways. And I think that's what I recognize, that that's how I was coping. And the self-destruction just led to a lot of depression. And that's really what it was. I recognized that I was really, really depressed. And I'd quit drinking before for short periods of time, and the depression always got better. And so it was like, you know, it was like a Captain Obvious moment. I'm really fucking depressed. I can swear on here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm really depressed. If I remove this one thing from my life, this like control, things will probably get a little bit better, and then I can go from there. And that's how it started.
One of my best friends just literally like a few months ago went through that same thing.
Really?
And it was because of his depression. He has pretty bad depression. And he's been medicated. He spent the last, you know, like 15 years trying to sort it out medically and all this stuff. And then he just went into a program and quit drinking, like an outpatient thing.
Yeah.
And then it's tough. I mean, we're in a band together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's a guy who used to be like, oh, we got, you know, a couple hours. Let's go down and get a drink.
Totally.
Even if it's just one, it's not getting wasted. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing about alcohol, too. It's it creates an emotionally cathartic experience, even if it is just one beer, even if you're not getting plastered. It's a way for you to connect with people. And I think that's why they say that AA works so well for so many people, because you're taking one emotionally cathartic experience, like going to a bar and sitting with your buddies after work and commiserating.
And replacing it with that.
Going to a meeting, sitting around with people and commiserating. Yeah. And sharing, having that shared experience. You're really just replacing it.
Did you AA it?
Totally, yeah.
That's a good program.
Yeah, it's worked for me.
I mean, it is. I've seen a lot of my friends really flourish.
I've tried a million different things. Oh my God, I went on. Have you ever heard of Antabuse?
Mm-mm.
Oh my God. This is how I kind of knew I had a problem. Antabuse is a medication that you take, and it's for really, really hardcore alcoholics. Like, I wasn't that bad, but I was just like, oh, it's a pill. It's easy. You take it, and if you have more than one beer, like, it could kill you. Like, you start vomiting, you get headaches. Because
See, that's where, like, I don't think I have a problem. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I couldn't, like, I would go on the road and I would go to people's, you know, stay in like a family's house. They'd put me up. And if they didn't drink, if there wasn't like a glass of wine I could have after the show, I'd be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I didn't like knowing that I was that dependent on it.
Yeah.
Even if it was just a little bit.
Right. Damn. Are you happy now? And that blog that you wrote, or that article that you wrote in that, what? Website was it? Sorry.
It was XO Jane.
XO Jane.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, wow, this is a good, that's, you know, it seems like something that if you read it and you were in that mindset that you were a couple of years ago, you'd be like, all right, maybe
this is something I need to do. That was the hope.
Yeah. Cause there's an amount of clarity that you're speaking with and honesty. Like you do talk about it as a drag to drink, walk around with a glass of fucking club soda.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a buzzkill when you're at a show and everyone's having margaritas or whatever.
It's like smoking those blue cigarettes. You're like, oh, so.
You're right. It's not as sexy.
No. You don't smell bad, but it's a drag.
Yeah. You know, when I sat down to write that blog, I had a close friend who was struggling, and I wrote it specifically for him. And I never told him. He doesn't know. But I thought, like, I can't shove this down his throat, but I can share, like, what I went through, and maybe he'll recognize himself in it. So that's the hope, that someone else, you know, because that's what happened with me. I had a lot of friends who were musicians or worked in the industry, and they got sober. And I was jealous. I looked at them and was like, damn, she can do it. Like, I can too, I think.
See, my thing is, like, what do they do? Like, what do you do?
Like with our time? Sober,
like, what do you do? And I just mean, like, in those little things, like, it's weird because you go through your mind and you start going, like, oh, I don't do anything that doesn't revolve around alcohol. Even now, with the Alamo Draft House going, like, I don't drink when I go to the movies because I don't like the taste of alcohol and popcorn, and I love eating popcorn when I go to the movies. So I do have a Coke, but that's people awesome. I go with drink, but, like, it's, like, everywhere you go, you know, I was doing the math in my head. I was thinking today when I was reading that thing, I was just going through the last couple of days. Like, okay, well, I played at Sam's in San Antonio on Saturday. And I did have a drink for the hour to kill, like, an hour. And also just because there's a lot of people when they're drunk and they come talk to me if I'm sober, I am intolerant. I'm not a nice person to drunk people when I'm sober.
It completely changes your experience.
And there are times when I will have a drink or two just so that I don't get mad at somebody.
Right, right. Right. Yeah, I'm a little bit more sensitive after shows now, I think, to that.
Are you?
But, I mean, as far as, like, what you do, it just changes things.
I know.
You know, like dating actually has gotten a lot better.
You don't get laid as much, do you?
No, I don't sleep with as many people.
Of course you don't, because you know you've got judgment.
Exactly.
That's the other thing. So it's like
screwed, but not literally.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. but you know what? Like the vetting process of dating has gotten a lot better because now, it's really easy just to go have a drink with somebody. You just super convenient. It's kind of lazy, you know. Just go have a drink and start opening up. But now I'm like hyper aware of my emotional state, and I'm like, let's go rock climbing, or you know, let's like go to the park. I have a lot of park dates.
That if I lived there, I would do that a lot.
Yeah,
it's a good. And plus, everything's just so expensive there that like going and walking in the park might be one of the easiest.
It's the cost efficient. Yeah. Well, and that's another. I'm a very cheap date now.
Are you? That's true. That is true.
Yeah.
Is dating in New York hard? And when you're sober, no.
Otherwise,
it hard
it's
anyway.
Super
dating,
easy.
Like I dated, it's. I'm not good at it. It's real weird. And
but you have a great lady now.
I have a nice
lady.
Yeah.
Obviously, you did something right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it's hard. But I've had a lot of fun dating in the city. There's the whole like paradox of choice thing. There's so many people to date. You go out on one date with somebody and you have a nice time and you think, oh, but there's like 15 other people, you know, on my block on Tinder right now who've liked me. And so I could go out with any of these people.
Are you're on Tinder?
No.
Okay.
I did it for like all of 3 seconds.
I did too.
How did it work out?
I saw this one girl that was crazy that I didn't like. I knew, you
right?
know, like I was like, ah.
That's happened to me.
Then plus I'm 46.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put age appropriate people, like my girlfriend's obviously a lot younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
When I put age-appropriate people in, I was getting all these old ladies.
You mean 46-year-olds?
Kind of. That just didn't seem like there. And there's also that culture of like, that drives me nuts. Like on all their, there's no picture in their profile mm-hmm. where they're not in some incredibly exotic location.
Like, okay. You know right. what I mean? Like this is me yeah. every day. So, okay.
I'm either climbing mountains in Nepal or swimming in the Caribbean.
Do you
two choices.
I don't know if you have that thing on OkCupid here, but in New York, or maybe it was
I've
Tinder,
I've never done
too.
That one.
Okay. So, well, I think it was Tinder, too, that like in New York, like every single guy, like they're either CrossFitting or they're with like a sedated tiger.
That's creepy.
Is that not a thing?
Here's the creepy thing that I noticed in my. I was a day and a half on Tinder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I love that you counted that.
I made
day.
no connection. And mostly I was doing it like when I was pooping and stuff, which is really just
when
sad.
Everybody's on Tinder.
It's sad. It's...
You go to the bathroom yeah, and you're yeah. like, I need a pick me up right now. This one isn't going as planned.
Yeah. What are you talking about? In Texas, the amount of women that are holding firearms in their photos is overwhelming. It's overwhelming, and they're like assault rifles. And
I think, well, there's that whole like aspect of, you know, like you're afraid that the Craigslist killer is going to be on the other side of it, so you just want to let that guy
know. I just want to let you know.
You fuck with me. I've got this. I will kill you.
Hey, do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have an older brother and sister.
Well, how much?
You're
the baby?
I am the baby. I am totally the baby. they will concede to that. My brother is 5 years older than me. My sister is 11 years older than me. They both live in San Antonio.
I love your voice, like your speaking voice.
Thank you.
So what do they do? Are they in the racket that we're in?
No, not at all. No,
they in the game?
No, my brother did a lot of theater and he does a lot of writing. So he's also creative. He was definitely my hero when it came to writing and reading growing up. He does a lot of work with NAMI in San Antonio.
What's that?
It's the National Association of Mental something something. I should really know what that acronym stands for. But it's they advocate for people with mental disabilities.
Okay.
With different mood disorders and stuff. And so sort of in our industry, it's very sort of in our racket.
Yeah.
With us crazies. And my sister just had a baby. I've got a nephew now. And so she's been taking care of my nephew.
Jacob. So no one went into the medicine business.
The medicine.
No, I come from a medicine business family.
No, none of us. My sister did surgical sales for a long time, and so she was like in the sort of same stratosphere.
Yeah.
But no, none of us went into medicine.
Does that disappoint your dad? Did it?
No, it didn't, surprisingly. I mean, you know, my older brother did theater, and that just sort of paved the way for me to do whatever I wanted. I think they sort of expected me to like do law or something like that. I was really, really into like Middle Eastern politics when I was in college and spent a lot of time in the Middle East.
Yeah, I read that.
And I think they expected me to like fervently follow that. And so did I. But no, I can honestly say like the last couple of years in my dad's life, he was really, really proud of me because he saw that I was doing what made me happy. And he was
adamant about it. Like in your bio and stuff, you're like, this is fucking... okay. No, you know what I mean?
Planting my flag in this.
Well, I relate to that. You know, like I had to fight people to get out of my, you know what I mean? To have them change their expectations of me where they wanted me to be a lawyer or a doctor. And you're like, you know, hey, come on, man. I'm like, seriously, you want me to be your doctor?
Right. You really don't. I barely even know how to open like the Advil bottle. I can't.
I would much rather have that dude just singing songs over there. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Well, because I think that's half the battle, just letting yourself do it. And even if it's like if you're just fucking like taking guitar lessons. And I think that's half the battle for everybody else. You know, the people who are pressuring you to do law, there's something that they're not doing in their life. And it doesn't have to be their career. They're just, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's something that I'm really, really interested in.
How old were you when you were like, oh, wow, this is a... You're kind of a later music
I was a later bloomer.
Okay, so let's go back to Laredo. You got the older brother and sister. Mm-hmm. You got the parents, the candy striper mom. She gave it up by the time you came along.
She had.
She was like a 45-year-old candy striper.
No, the outfit is not as charming at that point.
No. Okay. So what were you doing in Laredo? Were you like getting out? Like I'd rather be in Beirut. Than here.
Right? That's like literally, I was like, second developing country. Yes. Get me the fuck out of Laredo. No, I mean, I love Laredo now, but when I was growing up, it drove me insane.
What? Like, was it like obviously your dad was a doctor and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you probably lived in like a neighborhood that wasn't like, didn't live in like, you know,
that's all of Laredo. That was super racist.
That's what's happening to me. Well, I'm Cuban. I live.
Oh, you're allowed. Okay.
And I lived in Mexico.
Okay.
When I was a kid.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, we were right. I love that you're like, I'm super.
I'm not Donald Trumping up here.
Right. No, I would give you our time. No, we were upper middle class. Like, I grew up very comfortable. I didn't need or ask for any, like, material things for the most part. So I think there was, like, a lack of resources for what I wanted to do. There were, like, I wasn't able to have a lot of the conversations that I want. I don't know. I was just, like, a really neurotic kid. I listened to a lot of Fiona Apple when I was, like, in middle school, you know? So when I don't know, I got around to like my junior year, and my older brother was really lucky. He was also like really miserable in Laredo. So they sent him to boarding school, just to establish how comfortable we were, in Austin. And
at the St.
Stephen's. Yeah. So I'd come up to St. Stephen's, and it was like, you know, like there's no bookstore in Laredo because the literacy levels are so low. And then I came up to you know, there's like Bookwoman in Austin and like Ani DeFranco's everywhere, and it's blowing my mind. And my brother's bringing, you know, like Noam Chomsky home and like bringing me all these books, and I'm like, oh my god, there's a whole world out there.
Right.
So I got to my junior year, and my parents at that point, they couldn't afford to send me to a school. So I got online and was like, I'm gonna go somewhere, and I found an exchange I was like, I remember, like, you know, on, I don't know, what is it, like Saved by the Bell or something, there'd always be like the foreign exchange student made fun of, and I was like, oh wait, that's a thing.
Yeah,
so I looked it up online and I found an exchange program, and that's what I ended up doing my last year of high school. I finished school early and I skipped out and I moved to Turkey for a year.
How was that?
It was crazy. It was a great time to be there, I think, because it was, God, it must have been 2005. Oh, my God. Okay. I was there when the
war was going on in Iraq.
Bush got reelected that year, which was not a – I mean, it was a good year to be there in the sense that it really opened my eyes. Like, the Abu Ghraib photos were released the year that I was there.
Okay.
So there were a lot of protests happening in Istanbul, and I got to see sort of the perspective from the other side, which was a lot, really what I wanted. You know, and what I got.
So interesting, you know, you think of somebody like, you just think of somebody that's from like almost a third world country of Laredo. You'd think that you'd want to go to like Greece or like, you know, oh no, I'm going to go to Paris for like.
Oh no, here's the thing. I totally wanted to. They were like, where do you want to go? And I was like, I love London.
okay.
Yeah, are you kidding? So,
yeah.
No, I was like, send me to Spain. I want to go to Mallorca.
Because you like went into the shit. Like you got to roll up your sleeves and get into it there.
Right. But so all those countries were taken. Like all the fancy countries get taken first. And I shit you not. They were like, Turkey's left.
We got a nice thing in Syria for you.
Right.
Nice Syrian family looking for a kid.
They're like, what do you know about Turkey? And I was like, it's the land of infinite Thanksgiving. Like, I don't know. I didn't know anything. And like nobody in Laredo even, they were like, what's Turkey? They didn't know. I didn't know either. I mean, I got sent to the country that they would send me to. And I mean, here's the thing though. I got sent to Istanbul. Like I wasn't in the outskirts, like on the border of Syria. I was in a city with population of like, God, it's at least like 13 million.
And it's a pretty international city.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not so like, you didn't even know that song by the They Might Be Giants?
Oh, God.
Istanbul, the Constantinople. Istanbul, the
I didn't.
Okay, until then. Is that just playing in the streets everywhere?
All the time, everywhere. They don't even, there's no call to prayer. It's just that song.
Did you learn stuff about
Islam,
the Muslim culture, Islamic
tons.
Culture.
Yeah. So I had a host family. They were Muslim, but they were like secular Muslims. It was like, you know, sort of.
They weren't
like
super intense.
No, like they didn't fast for Ramadan. I tried fasting for all of 2 days, and my host dad was like, "What's wrong with you? Why are you fasting?" But I mean, God, there was like, you know, there's a mosque on every single corner in Istanbul, and there are people from all sort of walks of life of faith. So, you know, there are women in headscarves. My host mom didn't wear one. My grandmother did. And in Istanbul, for example, like they made fun of the women who wore the full hijab. Like they really wanted to disassociate from that level of I guess fundamentalism or belief system. So that was really interesting for me to see, because there were a lot of parallels between like growing up as a non-denominational Christian in Texas and sort of like secular Christianity to secular Islam.
Yeah.
And they definitely equated being modern and being like first world with being secular, which I thought was interesting.
It seems like doesn't that seem like if you're secular, it's a little more first world? The more fundamental to me, it's kind of like you're not accepting much change.
Well, yeah, that's true. You're not accepting a lot of, there's not a lot of room for other people's beliefs or other people to coexist, really.
Or growth in your.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I guess that's probably, that fundamentalist, that's probably the definition of it.
Yeah. Don't know, grow.
No growing.
So did you learn Turkish? Were you speaking some Turkish?
Yeah. I learned Turkish. I don't remember as much as I do now, but yeah, I spoke Turkish.
Their coffee is fucking badass.
It's like crack.
It is the shit.
Turkish coffee is great. Oh God, it's so funny. So I was a smoker when I moved to Istanbul.
You're no longer a smoker.
I am no longer a smoker.
Well,
now,
good for you.
Quitting drinking helps that.
Yeah, I bet it does.
So So I was a smoker. God, I was like 17, and I hid it from my host family because I didn't, you know, I didn't want them to find out that I was smoking. And one day my host mom was like going through my room or something, and she found my cigarettes. And she, you know, she didn't really speak much English, so it was like a very broken sort of physical conversation we'd have. A lot of charades. And she, when I came home from school, she showed me the cigarettes, and then she gave me one and like lit it for me. She was, and like served me coffee. She was so excited when she found out that I was a smoker.
Oh.
Because we could like sit and have our Turkish coffee,
yeah,
and smoke cigarettes together.
Yeah.
It was like,
dude, I did this session in Houston in the 90s, and I went to some weird, like, you know, Middle Eastern kind of like import place.
Mm-hmm.
I was near the place where I was recording, and I got a coffee there. And I think they had to pull me off the wall. Like, I like getting caffeinated. Do you still like that? Is that something like when you're sober, do you drink coffee till the upper lip sweats? I know some sober people that do that. Like, they're like,
right.
Most of them used to do a lot of blow.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm just drinking a bunch of coffee.
Right. No, I don't. I mean, I do. I have a fair amount in the mornings, but I've definitely gotten to that point where, like, after 3 p.m., I can't have it because then I'll be up.
Up all night.
Right.
Yeah.
So, that's me. And once I start getting shaky, that's, like, when I go for the water. I don't know. I've become a little bit health nuttier in my sobriety.
That's good. That's good. I mean, I don't, sometimes I feel like people are here to give me advice on life as opposed to do my podcast.
It's cheaper than therapy.
It is.
Yeah.
Just for the price of a cup of coffee, you can have Allie listen to you, or just give you advice. So you left at the end of your stay there in Turkey, and came back to Laredo, and you're like, okay, I'm out of here.
Kind
you came
of.
To Austin?
No. I actually after
Sarah
Turkey.
Lawrence.
Before Sarah Lawrence, I went to Egypt. I studied Arabic at the American University of Cairo. So my dad's Egyptian. He's right. The youngest of eight kids. Family there is huge. So I studied in Cairo for a semester. And then...
How was that? What was that like living in Cairo?
It was amazing. It's very different from Istanbul. Definitely a lot more devout Muslims in Cairo. And it's huge. It's like New York City. Like, everyone's piled on top of everybody, but there's no air conditioning. I mean, there is. It's not that bad. But it was beautiful. And Egyptians are so friendly and loud. And I loved studying Arabic and being there and like going to Alexandria. It was an amazing experience. And it was definitely really, really humbling. I remember coming back to the U.S. and like wearing shorts again for the first time. And like, you know, regular shorts, yeah, and just being like, oh, it's like I'm naked. my legs can breathe.
What was your plan during all, like when you were in Egypt? What were you like, hey, what am I going
to
do?
The whole plan. So I'd gotten into Sarah Lawrence up in New York, and my plan was to go to Sarah Lawrence, do like peace and justice studies, Middle Eastern politics, go back to Egypt, continue studying Arabic, like do a year in Lebanon. And then, like, I don't know, either do some nonprofit work or journalism work or something. But I was very gung-ho on staying in the Middle East.
Wow.
And that was what I was supposed to do. I went to college. And after my freshman year, I was supposed to spend a semester in Beirut. My friends from Cairo were all already there. I was going to be doing it. It was like the American Lebanese University, the Arabic program. And like a week before my flight left, Israel started bombing Beirut. So that just fell through the hole, almost literally. And so my summer plans were gone. They were done. And I had a friend who had an apartment in Austin. And I just asked him, like, hey, can I take your place for the summer? And I moved up here for the summer. And that's when I fell in love with Austin.
What were you doing? Were you working?
Oh, my God. I got a job canvassing. With
Oh, canvassing.
Like going
like
door
going
to
door. To door.
Going yeah, door to door.
As opposed to creating canvases for painting.
I was painting in my room all summer. No, it was for like Texpurg, having to do with like Barton Springs or something. But it was a lobbyist organization.
Oh, yeah, like Save Our Springs or something.
Save Our Springs. Yeah, that's what I was working on. I was that asshole.
Oh, no, you weren't that asshole. Thank you. I don't do anything for it. I just swim in there.
You're welcome. But I don't know if Texpurg did anything. No, because I get them now, the people who come to my door, and I just look at like puppy. Like, I'm so sorry that you have to do this, but I know what it's like. So I canvassed for a while. I had a really short internship with Narrow Pro Choice here, because they were founded here in Austin.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Pro-choice movement started here.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then I got a job. Oh, my God. I got a job working on Sixth Street as a shot girl.
Oh,
at
God.
Bourbon Rocks. Which, believe it or not, is how I know a bunch of the musicians that I know now, because they were, because, God, one of the house bands was Sauce.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Sauce used to play with, you know, like Stefano and.
Yeah.
All of those guys were in the band.
I was just on a panel with Stefano for a thing. I love him.
He's a great guy. He's a riot.
Wait, who else is in Sauce?
Daryl. The bassist. What's Daryl's last name?
Daryl Phillips.
Daryl, yeah. Daryl played bass. And that's when Boombox, those guys were. So Carlos, the Grooveline Horns, were playing with Sauce then. So it was so much fun. You know, I was like 18.
Yeah.
You know, I had access to all the liquor I wanted. You know, I was the shot girl, and they'd like stick me behind the beer tub. And I had the time of my life. Like, I loved it.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
You just wore like little clothes, exposed some belly.
Yeah, I had the little tank top and the shorts. Oh my God.
Is that, I mean, how creepy does that get? Because I had a girlfriend a few years ago that, I mean, there was somebody that was like, oh, you would be great at this. And the way that they presented it to her, like, oh, you know,
you could be a prostitute.
No, but it was kind of like, you're going to be able to get successful, and it's kind of like acting, and we went out to this thing and saw where she was, and there were guys like just really being kind of gross. And
mm-hmm. Oh, totally. I mean, you're at a bar. You're at a bar on 6th Street, and you're wearing, you know, next to no clothing.
And you have to be nice to them.
Or you well, you have to be like sort of cheeky, you know,
yeah,
and be in waitress mode, and so that's what I did.
Yeah. All right, so you didn't play then even then?
No, I had bought a guitar when I was 17 to try and like impress this guy that I had a crush on who was going to open mics. And I went to two lessons, you know, bought like the 8-lesson package at the local school,
and
my
didn't.
Parents, and went to two lessons. the second, like, but on the first lesson, they taught me finger picking form. They wouldn't let me use a pick. The second lesson, it was like me and 2 7-year-olds, and the 7-year-olds kicked my ass. Like, they were so much better than me, and I just never went back. But when I moved to Turkey, I took the guitar with me, and so I slowly started like learning a bunch of covers. And
yeah,
all I knew,
were you learning like the Ani DiFranco? Was that
what
you were into?
Yeah, okay. I was into the Ani DiFranco and like Damien Rice and like Mira,
right,
a bunch of moody singer songwriters.
Yeah.
And I was not playing at all when I was in Austin, just sort of in my room by myself. And it wasn't until I went back to Sarah Lawrence after I'd taken that summer/semester off that, it wasn't until I went back to school and I started losing my patience with school that I started writing.
And then. You had to make the call.
Yeah.
Hey, Dad and Mom, listen.
About that school thing.
Yeah.
I wrote my first song. God, like the week that I had finals, there was like a really, really rough period of time in my family. One of our family members got really, really sick and attempted suicide.
Yeah.
And they were in a really, really bad accident. They'd thrown themselves onto a highway.
Oh my God.
And it was like a really, really just, yeah, traumatic experience. And I was in college, I was in school, and I didn't really know how to deal with it. And so I wrote, And I wrote my first song. And I was literally on the train going from Manhattan to campus, looking at the lyrics and just like knowing that I was done. Like I was done with school. And I was like, this was the thing that I was going to do.
Yeah.
And like, I had a total nervous breakdown and I skipped most of my
finals.
What
does a nervous breakdown look like for Ali Tadros?
Like crying and heaving and like hiccuping.
Publicly or just in your own privacy or your own home?
No, well then, I mean, it was a really, really emotional time for me then. Okay. So there was like a lot of crying in front of my professors and tons of therapy. So after that, I'd taken a semester doing an internship in San Antonio with a congressman. And, you know, since it was, I was working for a congressman, like I had tons of free time.
A national congressman, or an actual congressman.
Yeah,
I meant like a state senator.
No, this is a national congressman. Right. And I used to like print lyrics and tab sheets at the office and like make my business card that my boss didn't know. But when I got to San Antonio, I basically used all of my free time to either write or go to open mics. And I sort of told my sister quietly, like, hey, I think I want to try and like really do this. But I waited until I'd worked at that internship for like 7 or 8 months to tell my parents that I wasn't going back to school.
It's not working.
Yeah.
How did they take it? Oh, no.
Really? In the beginning, they were like, well, we're going to cut you off. And this, like, of course, I don't blame them because, like, it came out of nowhere. I'd never written. I wasn't a guitarist. Like, nobody knew.
See. You could see how that would just totally freak your
if parents
out.
If I had a kid, yeah, it would scare the shit. Like, are you on crack?
I just decided I'm going to do this.
I'm going to be a songwriter. Like, yeah. I need more attention.
That's funny. I have a cousin that had this. She's got a really cute voice, and everyone always tells her like, "Oh, you should do voiceover." She's got a little voiceover. Like, hey, you should do voiceover stuff. You could do like cartoons or something. And so I guess enough people told her, and she lives in Birmingham, and I was in Birmingham on tour, and we went to dinner, and she was like, "So, I wanted to talk to you because you're experienced in the entertainment business, and I worked out a thing with my dad. I'm gonna go to LA." And try and do this voice thing. I'm like, you know what? You totally could. And, you know, you get the right people. I actually know a couple of people that do a lot of voice work. Mm-hmm. And I could just send you their way. And they could at least just point you in the right direction of what you need to do. And she's like, yeah, he said he's going to pay for me to go out there and work on it for 2 months. And then if it doesn't work, I'm like.
Oh.
And she did it. And he cut her off after 2 months. And I was just, I mean, I told everyone. I was like, it doesn't. 2 months. I mean,
right. That's how long it takes me to put on a pair of pants. Like, you can't do anything.
I mean, there are some people that have gone out there and gotten off of a bus and just bumped into the right person,
right,
and said the right thing. But that's few and far between. Anyway, so yeah, and then they cut you off, and I don't know why that reminded me of my cousin.
Right.
Sorry to go off.
No,
on that.
No. It totally makes sense. Because I'm sure I thought then too. I mean, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I just thought that I was, you know, just going to keep going to open mics, and eventually someone would sign me to something. You know, there'd be a piece of paper and a signature, and then I'd be driving a Mercedes. Sure. What changed was I got a show at Luna in San Antonio, mm-hmm. Wonderful jazz listening room down there, and it was my first full band show. And my parents came up for it, and they'd never seen me play or heard me really play before. And I think they saw that show. And after that, they were my cheerleaders after that show.
That's great.
Yeah. It was a really, really amazing. I mean, they were still freaked out. And occasionally my mom would drop in the like, so when are you going to go back to college?
Yeah.
She stopped doing that about a year ago.
It's weird when they stop doing that, isn't it?
Yeah. You don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember I quit this band, and then I was like, you know, we did a bunch of stuff, and everything was about to happen, and then everything fell apart, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna go be a fucking landscaper.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my grandpa, the doctor, was like, really? You're so good.
Yeah.
You're just gonna give up? I was probably like 23 or 24.
Wow.
And I mean, by that time, I'd already, you know, put in 10 years, you know?
Oh, my God.
So he was like, what are you going to, like, just do it. I mean, it's hard. Everything's hard.
Right.
So that was kind of cool.
That's amazing.
When the dude that was always like, I have a friend that works at Enron. He can get you a job there. I swear to God, and, my grandpa always used to have this guy at Enron that can get me a job.
Well, good thing you didn't
I remember when the Enron thing blew up. I was like, hey, how's your buddy doing over at Enron? So I was looking for a job.
That's amazing. It's amazing when that turnaround happens. I called my mom. Oh my God. It must have like 6 or 7 months ago. I had that same moment that like, I don't know if I can do this rent. And she was just like, no, you're not.
Suck it up.
No, no, you're not. You're going to do it. And that, yeah, that was not what I expected from her at all. And it was really, really amazing.
Yeah. So then you were here and you made some music.
Yep. After I was in San Antonio, I'd been doing that for, 7 or 8 months. I started getting gigs and eventually, I was doing like the restaurant bar gig thing like 5 nights a week. And,
that's a way to cut your teeth with nobody listening.
Yep.
And
a shit ton of
playing
time.
For 4 fucking hours.
That's exactly.
Having to learn shitloads of songs before everyone because you get bored.
Right. And
when you have to redo songs, learning how to make a jazz version of it so it doesn't sound like the exact same song.
When you do it in the same set.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what happened. I got a gig. It was like 10:30 to 1:30 a.m. a drink downtown San Antonio 2 nights a week, $100. Wouldn't even cover my food.
It's work. Yeah.
But it was work, and I was, 21 years old. I was in heaven. But I didn't know how to play any songs, so I had to learn a shit ton of music or just start writing and then BSing. I mean, I used to, I'd repeat the same songs, but people were drunk.
But also you have a thing that also I think I have from it is that Susanna, that's how we know each other, right?
Just Susanna. Yeah.
She has it too. That comfortability to talk to people in a way that hopefully on my end, but with you definitely last night with Susanna, it was very engaging, it was very engaging. And I don't even know if it's like a thing that you're conscious of that you're doing, but you have a way of setting up these songs to where you really listen when the song starts.
Right.
Which that's a fucking art in itself.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, that's very conscious. It's
good.
Definitely.
Well, it's really good. I mean, you can tell you've played a lot of shows. Like that kind of comfortability and being able to,
Yeah, I think it's playing a lot of shows, and I think it's going to a lot of shows and paying attention to what works and what doesn't work about what the artist is doing.
Sure.
I went. Are you familiar with Pat Pattison?
No.
He heads up the songwriting department up at Berklee School of Music in Boston, and he does these like songwriting masterclasses and stuff. And I went to one a couple of months ago, and we were critiquing a song, and the artist who'd written the song got up on the piano and she said, this song is called My Way, and he stopped her and was like, no, when you introduce a song, do not tell people what the title is. You're doing that because you're lazy and you're insecure and you don't know what else to say. Let them figure it out. You want them to get to the hook and be like, oh, you want that. Like, let them have that moment as opposed to getting to the part where you say my way. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's what she said. Okay. Like, set it up. Give them something else. Give them something else to dig into before the song starts. And I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah.
And then I went to go see Jason Isbell like a week later. And never once did he say this song is called blah, blah, blah. Like he never did that.
But he introduced the songs.
He introduced the songs and he gave you something. Yeah. That made
something
you want
to look
to
for.
Lean forward to.
Lean
forward into. Yeah. I thought that was so cool. I love that stuff.
You're a smart person.
Thanks.
Yeah. No, some people don't ever. That never even dawns on some people. That's true.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think it's the theater background too. The like performance aspect
That's
of it
is
interesting, and like whatever I can do to make it more engaging for people too, and for me, like whatever we can make it a experience where we're in it together. There's more of a chance for connection.
Yeah.
So I think there are little hacks, little things you can do to make it easier for people.
That was an interesting thing last night. Like, I didn't mean it interesting, condescending, or trying to hide the fact that I thought it sucked or something. I thought it was really cool, and I thought it was an interesting venue. It was a good time. It was. I got to ask you if you know this girl, because there's a girl that I'm not spent, but a group of people spent New Year's like 88 to 89 mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. And she was with us. And I think she was there last night.
Okay.
Maybe she's your friend.
Maybe, okay. We'll
anyway, I think her name's Jennifer.
Jennifer. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to chat.
I'm going to stop talking about this because can you imagine being at home listening to this?
Like, we're like, what the hell? Guys, what are you talking about? Okay, so last night I did a house concert or private show at the Austonian, which is a residence on 2nd and Congress. It's a high rise. They had me on the 10th floor. There are probably about 60 people there seated. A lot of people who lived in the building and then some fans of mine who'd come to the show as well.
Right.
Ben Ballmer opened up. He played with his bassist and then I did a set.
Boy, that guy.
Ben.
I never even, nothing, I mean... You know what I mean? Like you going cold. You're like, I'm there to see you. And like, right. Okay, so this guy's going to play. All right. And he's got a weird thing on the top of his head.
The top knot.
And then just like a random like stand-up bass player. Like what's going to happen? The second they started, I was just like, whoa. That guy's great, man.
He's wonderful.
Yeah.
Dude, and he's the nicest guy.
He was very nice.
He also writes like 17 songs a day.
I hate people like that.
Hate him.
And are they all that good?
Yeah, they're. I mean, like, not everyone's a home run. Good, I'm not going to give him that. No, but he writes some amazing songs.
You guys have done stuff together for a while. You did a single together?
Yeah, we did Whim. The video's somewhere up on the internet. Mm-hmm. We did that song together. And we did some shows together, a little bit of touring and stuff like that. He's just a really easy guy to work with.
I mean, he was also great with that sort of, you can tell that he's been out on the road.
He's played so many shows. And he's, you know, he's had this residency at the Whippin for like 4 years. Every Monday night he's there. And so like that's one of those rooms.
I fucking walked there. I've never been there. I mean, I've been there. I've never been to his thing.
It's great. He always brings in different players. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
He's still doing it?
He's still doing it. I mean, he goes out on the road, but otherwise Monday nights he's there.
So tonight.
Is today Monday? Yeah, he'll be there tonight. He just got back from the UK. So, yeah, isn't it? It's crazy. There's all those players hiding out. So, yeah, I was happy I could bring him in. And it was nice to break up the night because I knew that playing for 2 45-minute sets would probably be a little bit too much.
Yeah.
For that crowd. Wanted to mix it up a little bit. So, it was
nice. I knew you were good. I remember when I was supposed to meet up with you in New York last year. And I went through all your stuff and everything and went through your drawers and no, don't worry, I didn't.
It's basically the same thing.
I don't know. I saw such different kinds of shows last night, but I was really, I was very impressed and just, I hate to use that word impressed. Because it seems like I wasn't beforehand, but I just was.
I
was really. I just thought you were really genuine and just so good and just so in control. Yeah, I know. No, I know the feeling. Because when people say that to me, I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" I almost cried when I was up there.
No, that's amazing. What's really funny about that too is that you know, like the whole sobriety, like AA thing is like, you know, the serenity prayer, like, God grant me the serenity to accept the things
I cannot change, and the wisdom to know the difference.
It's all about like what's within your control and what's not. So when you tell me like I'm in control, I'm like, yes.
Well, you had everyone, you know?
Right, right. Well, and that's the wonderful thing about those kinds of settings. And I think that's what happens when you play a shit ton of bar gigs and restaurant gigs where there's so many elements out of your control that once you get to that point in your career where you play shows that are within your control, you're like, I'm going to control the shit out of it. Like,
yeah.
I want to manipulate everything I can.
How much are you playing now?
Oh, God. Not a ton. I probably play like 3 or 4, maybe 5 shows a month. Okay. So I try, I mean, and like if I go on the road, it's different. Yeah. But I'm just a lot more deliberate about the shows now. So like in New York, I'm not playing bar gigs anymore. I'll do a listening room gig once a month.
What's a listening room? Is Rockwood?
Rockwood Music Hall. Okay. Yeah. So here in town, it'd be like Strange Brew.
Yeah.
And I'll just put all of my, you know, promotion energy into that one big show, or I'll do a big ticketed show and, you know, just try and kill it. And the experience is better for me, and I think it's better for the audience. And also, just like at this point in my career, I don't have the manpower to put on, you know, 10 high quality shows a month and be able to, you know.
Do you have people?
I have.
Do you have a team?
My team.
I hate that word.
The team. The capital team.
Team and branding and like all those words.
Level.
I never want to. Yeah.
take your career to the next level.
God, step it up.
I haven't heard that one.
Step up to the plate.
No, I just hear next level all the time and I like regurgitate in my mouth. No, I've had agents, I've had managers. Right now it's me and I have a virtual assistant. I have a personal assistant and she's amazing.
Who is it?
Her name is Fiona Zweeb. She lives in Florida. That's
the lady that was emailing me.
Yeah, exactly. See, she emailed you because I would have emailed you like 3 days late. So basically I pay her on an hourly basis. She's worked with me for God, like a year and a half, almost 2 years now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's worked as my assistant.
But she's somewhere else.
She's totally remote. She lives in Florida.
Part of the thing of me having an assistant would be having someone that has to hang out with me.
Like babysit you?
Like, no. No, like just, you know, I got to go to Home Depot. Mm-hmm. Hey, I got to like hang out with me while I steam clean the carpets.
Right. Isn't that just a friend? Huh? You're just saying, do you need a friend? Uh-huh. But like,
Susanna's got that baby now. That baby will hang out with her everywhere she goes.
That's why she had the baby. She just needed a friend.
She didn't afford an assistant. God, I thought I would see her at your show last night.
I'm sure she's got a baby.
I think some people have babies just so they don't have to go anywhere anymore.
You have to go to shows. I know. What's my excuse? Like, I'm single. I don't have a real job, and I have to bullshit about not going to people's shows sometimes. So Fiona's great because she handles all of the really annoying logistical things that like a monkey could do. God, that sounds terrible.
Wow, Fiona. I would ask for a raise because of the verbal abuse from your boss, your virtual boss.
No, that's not what I meant.
No, that's not what you meant. You're so nice. Anybody who's listened this long knows you didn't mean it like that.
Sure.
Something a monkey.
She does. No. They're like, okay, here's the thing. They're like the admin tasks that would honestly like make me want to pull my hair out.
Sure.
Like coordinating band rehearsals or coordinating my calendar or like making sure that everybody's RSVP'd for the show and they know where parking is.
Yeah.
Those things that I'm just not built for, that she kicks ass at. Like she enjoys those things. We had this conversation. I don't understand it, but I'm glad she exists. So I pay her hourly, like happily.
Okay.
Because she does it efficiently. And like those are the things that I imagine on some level, like I've always dreamt a manager would do. They'd handle the things that I didn't want to handle. So she handles some of that stuff.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Have you ever met her in person?
Totally. Yeah. Oh, she's brilliant. She studied music business at NYU. Yeah. And if anyone hears this and they want to work with her, just send me an email, Ali@AliTadros, and I'll connect you with her. She's great.
Tadros. Was I saying Tadros?
It's all the same. It's fine.
Dude, I called Susanna Schaffel for like 9 years. Like, up until like 4 months ago.
Shuffle. Oh, that's so great.
You know, she was my first guest on this show.
Really?
Uh-huh. She was the first live show I ever did. She recently booked her own show for this show where we cleared out this room and had like six moms and stuff with babies and stuff.
Just Are you all serious?
Talking on microphones.
Did you guys talk about like
being moms at rock?
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh my, who else was on that show?
No one. No, Jazz Mills, Savannah.
Wow.
Welch from.
Yep.
Trisha's.
Yep.
Elizabeth Man. McQueen.
Yep. That.
And there was another lady, Raina.
Just, and like all such great people. I have so much respect for them. It scares the crap out of me.
You want to have kids?
I don't know yet.
You said something about it last night.
Oh, yeah. When I was talking about that song about my dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I haven't totally ruled it out, but it's not
in theory you do, but.
Exactly. Well, like in theory, I want a dog, you know? But like when it's in the house and it has to poop and I'm tired, like that's. Yeah.
Because you live in New York. That's a.
Right.
Even
winter
the dog
time
has to work. Yeah. Seriously.
They've got to put on the booties because of the snow and the salt. Yeah. So I don't, I mean, I'm 28 right now. If I
really?
Had, yeah.
Oh, I love you. That would be so great to be 28.
It's a good time. It's a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait. It's like I went to 28.
All of a sudden. Well, like, you've probably been here. For me, the kids thing, it's like the cart and the horse thing. Like, I haven't even found the horse yet. I'll
married for 10 years.
No kids, though. So do you want kids?
I don't think so.
I'm going to be an I don't think so person until forever.
I really like them. You know what happens? What's weird? It's like, look at that picture. You see all those kids? I change those guys' diapers. I raised those kids. They talk like me.
Mm-hmm.
They have musical tastes that I instilled in them. These are the only kids that walking around in junior high with My Bloody Valentine love list, like under their arm, like this is my jam. So even them, they're like, oh, you hate kids. You get a rap after a while when you don't have kids of like, when you're just cool and like, you know, I don't know if I want to have kids. They're like, he hates kids.
Right.
And it's like, I don't hate kids at all. Right. I love hanging. In fact, when I hang out with kids, I'm like, oh, it's be kind of cool. Be like the assistant. I'd have someone to go to Best Buy with me.
But you get them in small doses. And because they're removed from you at a certain point, like they don't hate you.
That's the thing. Because, I mean, I just came off of I literally, Saturday, got a call from my dad. First combo since last October when we had to take a break.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And if I, that's one of the, I never want my kid to feel like I do about my dad.
Yeah.
Like, that scares me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't like that dude very much sometimes.
Yeah, of course. You're that close, so you can kind of afford to, you know?
Yeah.
They're always sort of around. But no, I had the crazy aunt, the, like, crazy, amazing aunt who, like, gave me my first Doors record.
Yeah.
And, like, introduced me to Janis Joplin and brought me, like, bead sets when I was 8 years old.
Did she have kids?
No, she didn't have kids. So she had us. So she was awesome with us. Yeah.
I'm okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. You cool with being the crazy aunt to your sister's kid?
Totally. Yes.
Hey, are you working on a new album?
I am.
Aren't you due?
Yeah, I am super due. So I'm going into the studio in October.
What's in New York?
In New York. In Woodstock, New York.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah, going out to Woodstock.
With
a guy, dude named Kevin Salem, producer out there, awesome guitarist. He's done like Reichi Yamagata and Yola Tango, a couple of different records. And he's
you've worked with some people that have worked with some people.
A couple people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the guy who did my last two records, he's wonderful. He's out of Kentucky. Dwayne Lundy. And he's done like a lot of Ben Solis stuff and Jim James and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was the name that I really
liked. Jim James.
Yeah. I rocked a lot of your stuff yesterday and this morning. I really like what you do. And I like you. I left that show last night a little bit. I've been looking forward to the show, the other show that I went to, like, for months. And it was like, I really was like, man, I felt like I could have watched. I felt a little sad leaving the show. Because I was like, I wonder what else she's going to do or say. Because I like
you. Thank
you. Susanna was right. She was.
Thanks, Suze.
Yeah, she's the best, isn't she?
She's amazing.
Susanna Schoffel.
Not Schoffel.
Ellie Tadros.
Yeah.
Tadros.
Jeez.
Tadros. What anything on the horizon going on? Or is there anything I'm missing about you?
Yeah, so when is this going to come out?
I don't know. It's going to be a couple weeks, though.
Okay, perfect.
Week and a half or
that's,
two.
No, at least...
Maybe 3 weeks.
You can say 7 weeks. No, don't say seven weeks.
7 weeks.
Okay, no, that's perfect. So by the time this comes out, I will probably have the campaign going for the new record.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm doing...
A Kickstarter?
Pledge Music. I'm going through Pledge, so we're doing pre-releases of the record.
Okay.
So, you know, people will get all of the new exclusives. They'll get the demos before the record comes out, because it's going to be a little while.
I can put this out when you launch that.
Awesome. So yeah.
We'll put a link, and I'll talk about it in the intro.
Awesome.
Yeah, we'll set it all up.
So that's my life right now, is just working on the new songs.
You got the songs. Did I hear any of them last night?
You heard a bunch of them last night.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess also with Ben, we heard some new songs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ben's got a new record coming out, too. So it'll probably be out once this
I'm going to reach
out
to him today.
Oh, right, awesome.
He gave me his card.
Sweet.
Yeah, thanks for... and thanks for having us.
You know, thank you guys for coming.
I really liked that. Yeah, one thing they got to do... They got to close the curtain.
Oh,
because
the
bright, it was
sea face.
Silhouette face.
I noticed that. Yeah. Good to know. I'll mention that. I'll mention that to Michael. Yeah.
Otherwise, it was fantastic.
Awesome.
They had a lot of snacks.
so many M&Ms. You mentioned the M&Ms earlier. I was
I had some peanut butter filled pretzel things.
We're making everybody hungry right now. run to the corners to go to HEB and get yourself some snacks.
People can find you at alitadros.com.
Yep.
You are also active in the world of Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
I'm on all of those things.
You're on those mediums. Mm-hmm. People can find your music in iTunes.
iTunes, Spotify.
Spotify, which is where I listened to you yesterday. Sorry. I do pay for Spotify, though.
I do, too.
Okay.
I probably made 3 cents off. That's awesome. I do it all the time.
Good. I want you to make 3 cents off of everything. No, I'm very... people got to look out for your Pledge Music campaign, which I will put a link to on Sweet. Our Facebook page and on the text of this podcast.
Yeah.
Am I missing anything? You're going to go to Houston.
I'm going to Houston after this. Yeah. No.
Another Houston.
Yeah. No, I think we covered everything. Just, man, thanks for having me. Thanks for coming last night. This was a really, really great conversation. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was a great conversation. Sweet. This is one of my favorite ones that I've had in a long time.
Bye.
On me, and I will fall like an avalanche. Ali Tadros. Oh man, what a great conversation. It was great. She was really honest, so cool, so clear-headed, so engaged. It was great. I love talking to her. Thank you, Susanna Schofield, for setting that up over a year ago, and it finally went down. All right, Ali Tadros. You can find out all about her at alitadros.com. Find out where she's playing. Of course, she is in New York and Brooklyn, so you can probably find her playing in that area, the Northeast. I'm sure she'll be back in Austin at some point. But check her out. She's fantastic. She is on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Ali Tadros. Love her. Okay? Go out there. Get involved. I've got to get this Ben Ballmer guy on. Maybe he'll be coming on pretty soon. All right. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Thank you, Ali, for stopping by. I know you were busy on your trip to Austin. She was on her way to Houston, took the time, sat down, and we had a great conversation. Don't forget that you can like us on Facebook, like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and also favorite it on Stitcher. If you're on there, don't forget, you can stream your podcasts, stream your movies, stream your music. Why not stream your podcast? All right, how about some more music from Ali Tadros? You guys have a great day, whatever you're doing. If you're jogging, do it. If you're in a band traveling, hey guys, break a leg tonight. It's gonna be a great show. Hopefully, wherever you are, maybe Iowa. What? And also, if you're pretending to work, hey man, it's me. I know your secret, and I'm with you. Solidarity, baby. Anti-workers. Hey, music from Ali Tadros right now. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, you can go to alitadros.com. You can like our Facebook page. Please get out there and get there. You can see pictures of things that happen to me in my life. All right? Music from Ali Tadros. Let's get down. Bad thing. Did I? Tear lights, they shine like fireflies through the murky window pane. Ideas grow like weeds, they fly like moths into the flame. My love, the night is young, our time is coming to a close, so free your fists of all the lists. Come slip your fingers into my coat. Crowd is waning, anticipating. Whisper close under the bottom. Ain't no use in tying a noose. Ain't nothing to know. Tore the edge and let him fall.
I took it all and led him forward toward the end. I tipped him toward the edge and let him fall. I watched him